saying the regime seeks to escalate conflict in the region while evading accountability. President Raisi says a terrorist attack on Iran's embassy in Syria is a sign of Israel's profound desperation and last struggle of a falling regime. And the World Bank says Israel's onslaught on Gaza has inflicted about $18.5 billion in damage to the critical infrastructure there. Hello and welcome everybody here in the Iranian capital, Tehran. This is World News. The United Nations Security Council has held an emergency meeting on the latest Israeli attack on the consular section of the Iranian embassy in Syria. Addressing the event, Iran's deputy representative to the UN called on the world body to vehemently denounce Israel's violation of the international regulations.
Regrettably, the absence of accountability and the Council's inaction has only encouraged and even emboldened this regime to continue its violation unchecked. It is high time for the Security Council to shoulder its responsibility and address the real threat to international peace and security. The Security Council must promptly fulfill its duty in response to Israel's reckless defiance. Urgent and enforceable measures must be taken to compel this regime to uphold its obligations.
Zahra Ershadi said Israel is defying Security Council resolutions and shows disregard for its international obligations. Syria's ambassador to the UN also called the attack a grave violation of international laws and norms. He said the Arab country holds Israel and the U.S. fully accountable. The Syrian official added the Israeli regime would not have dared to attack other nations' diplomatic premises if it wasn't for Washington's blind support. The Russian ambassador, whose country had called the meeting, slammed the airstrike as a flagrant violation of Syria's sovereignty. He said Israel seeks to further fuel the regional conflicts. China's envoy also condemned Israel's attack as a grave violation of the UN Charter and international law and a breach of the sovereignty of both Syria and Iran. Well, a ceremony is underway at the Iranian embassy in the Syrian capital, Damascus, commemorating the Iranian military advisors that were killed in the Monday Israeli attack on the consular section of the embassy. Our correspondent Ibrahim Wahdi is joining us now from the venue of the embassy with more details on what's going on today. Ibrahim, over to you.
We are here at the embassy, the Iranian embassy in Damascus, where the Iranian embassy just began to receive condolences for the martyrs who were assassinated by an Israeli airstrike on Monday evening. The ceremonies of funeral ceremonies were held at Sayyid Ruqayya Shrine in Damascus Old City, in the heart of the Damascus, to pay respect to the martyrs. Today we are seeing senior officials coming to pay their respect to the martyrs and to offer condolences to the Iranian, to the Islamic Republic of Iran and its people for the martyrdom of these IRGC senior leaders. So far we have received a religious delegation, representative of the Imam Ali Khamenei office, also some Palestinian figures, Palestinian faction leaders. There's the charge d'affaires of the Venezuelan embassy. We have also the representative now next to me, the representative of Sayyid al-Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei office in Syria. Also, we have the representative of the Islamic resistance in Iraq, in Syria, Sayyid Ali Mousavi just arrived. We are expecting also some governmental figures from the Syrian government. As we know, yesterday the head of the government, Prime Minister Sayyid Hussein Arnous, came to the embassy. He met with the ambassador. He checked the place. He was heading a senior governmental delegation with the Minister of Foreign Affairs and the Minister of Economy, the Minister of Media, along with other ministers. They checked the site, they paid their condolences and offered their full support from Syria to the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Ibrahim, we've seen a wide array of condemnations for this this illegal Israeli attack. Talk to us more about the reactions that have poured in since Monday's attack and the killing of the Iranians as a result of the illegal Israeli bombing.
As we know, on Monday, 5 p.m., the Israelis launched an air attack that resulted in the martyrdom of seven Iranian senior leaders of the Iranian Islamic Revolution Guard Corps. Now, since then, only a few hours later, condemnations began to. We started to hear condemnations from different countries, local condemnations from the Syrian parties, from the Syrian government, from also Palestinian factions here in Syria. Also, several condemnation statements strongly condemned this attack. Also, several condemnations from Arab countries, regional countries, and also international condemnations. For example, Qatar, Egypt, Jordan, UAE. Also, the Latin American countries like Venezuela, Cuba. All these countries condemn these attacks, and you see it's worldwide condemnation because of this heinous crime that was committed by the Israeli regime. Everyone considers this a violation, a blatant violation, not only for international law and human norms. Also, more importantly, it's a violation of the Syrian sovereignty and the Iranian sovereignty as well, along with unprecedented crime to attack directly an embassy, a diplomatic mission, which violates Vienna treaty as well. Yesterday also we heard that the Russian condemnation came along with a warning from the ministry, the Russian Ministry of Defense, where they warned that such aggression, such moves would take the whole region into an open war, which is considered a dangerous escalation in this time, especially when with what's going on in Gaza. With all this condemnation, we already know that the Israelis know no limits. They have no morals. They have they don't care about any violations. We can say, as Mr. President Bashar Assad yesterday talked to Mr. President Ibrahim Raisi, paid respect and condemned the attack. But he said also, these attacks, such attack, it's not unusual. We are familiar with this enemy. We've been fighting this enemy for years now, and we know this enemy very well. We know that we don't need so much to explain. We just need to see what's going on in Gaza. The destruction, the killing, the murder, the mass murder is going on there. The genocide that's happening.
Thanks a lot, Ibrahim Marki, joining us from the Syrian capital, Damascus. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution has vowed Tehran will make the occupying Zionist regime regret its deadly airstrike on the Iranian embassy in the Syrian capital, Damascus. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei made the remarks in a message of condolence on the martyrdom of a group of Iranian military advisors in Monday's Israeli aerial raid on Syria. The leader described Israel as a hated occupying regime. He vowed that the evil regime will be punished. Ayatollah Khamenei also saluted the martyrs of the attack, including two senior IRGC commanders, Major General Mohammad Reza Zahedi and General Mohammad Hadi Haj Rahimi. Now let's take a look at the profile of Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Zahedi, who was killed in the Israeli attack in Damascus.
Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Zahedi, a senior commander of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps' Quds Force, was killed in an unprecedented Israeli attack targeting the five-story consular building of the Iranian embassy in Damascus. Born in 1960 in the central Iranian city of Isfahan, Zahedi joined the IRGC in 1980 and fought in various battles during the Iran-Iraq War. Zahedi quickly rose through the ranks and from 1983 to 1986 took command of an important brigade of IRGC ground forces that was used to break enemy lines in multiple major operations. Later, he was promoted to commander of the IRGC's 14th Imam Hossein Division, a position he held until 1991, several years after the war had ended. In the 2000s, Zahedi served in more senior positions, including commanding the IRGC's Air Force and also Ground Force. During his tenure as the IRGC's Ground Force commander, he also spent a year at the helm of the Thara Law headquarters, which is responsible for protecting security in the capital, Tehran. Zahedi joined the Quds Force in 2008. There, he led operations in Syria and Lebanon, and played a key role in Iran's advisory support for Syria's war on terror. From 2016 to 2019, the Brigadier General returned to Tehran to serve as the IRGC's deputy for operations. He rejoined the IRGC's Quds Force in 2019 and served the force until his martyrdom.
Iran's president says a terrorist and criminal attack on the Iranian embassy in Syria is a sign of Israel's profound desperation and helplessness. Ibrahim Raisi was speaking with his Syrian counterpart Bashar al-Assad on the phone. Raisi added that the passivity and weak position of some Arab countries has prevented the Islamic world from adopting a united stance against Israel and made the regime more brazen in committing crimes. He described Israel's insane actions as the last struggles of this falling regime. He also slammed the U.S. and its Western allies for providing financial, weaponry, and media support to Israel. Assad, for his part, condemned Israel's attack as a violation of international law and a sign of moral degeneration of the regime. He also expressed his condolences to the government and nation of Iran and the families of those killed in the Israeli attack. A joint report by the World Bank and the UN shows the Israeli war on Gaza has caused damages of around $18.5 billion to Gaza's critical infrastructure. The report says the structural damage caused by the Israeli carpet bombing of Gaza has affected every sector of the Palestinian territory's economy. The damages are equivalent to 97% of the combined GDP of the West Bank and Gaza in 2022. The report covers only the first 4 months of the Israeli genocide in Gaza and embodies some aspects of the besieged strip's humanitarian crisis as well. It is found that more than half of the territory's population is on the brink of famine. At least 32,975 Palestinians, mostly women and children, have been killed since Israel began its war in early October. The UN Secretary General has denounced as unconscionable the Israeli killing of several international aid workers on duty in the Gaza Strip.
The devastating Israeli airstrikes that killed World Central Kitchen personnel yesterday bring the number of aid workers killed in this conflict to 196, including more than 175 members of our own UN staff. This is unconscionable. It demonstrates yet again the urgent need for an immediate humanitarian ceasefire, the unconditional release of all hostages, and the expansion of humanitarian aid into Gaza, as the Security Council demanded in its resolution last week. The resolution must be implemented without delay.
Meanwhile, the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, says the war on Gaza has witnessed the highest number of aid worker deaths ever recorded in any conflict. An Israeli airstrike left 7 aid workers associated with the U.S.-based charity World Central Kitchen dead in the Gaza Strip on Monday. The head of the charity called the incident a targeted attack, saying the strike indeed targeted humanitarian organizations showing up in the most dire situations when food is being used as a weapon of war. The Israeli killing of the World Central Kitchen aid staff has drawn international reactions. Western countries have called on Israel to offer an explanation. 4 Israeli soldiers have been injured in a car ramming attack at a military checkpoint in the occupied West Bank. Israeli sources allege that the operation was conducted by a Palestinian man. We now cross over to our correspondent Mona Kandil in Ramallah for more details. Mona, what can you share with us regarding this incident?
Well, according to Israeli military, after midnight, a Palestinian man in his vehicle arrived at a checkpoint near the city of Atiri in the lands occupied in 1948 Central Israel, known as Central Israel. He rammed his vehicle into Israeli policemen or officers and wounded at least four of those. One of them was in serious condition. Then he left the area after a chase. He succeeded to reach a military checkpoint known as Eliyahu near the city of Netanya, also inside the lands that were occupied in 1948. There he exited his vehicle and tried to stab Israeli officers there, as they are saying. And then the Israeli soldiers opened fire at him, shot him, and killed him. So the Israeli military are saying that this man is 26 years old from the city of Atiri that was occupied in 1948, and he's not from the occupied West Bank. The Israelis were warned that Palestinians who are still living in the in historical Palestine, let's say, had been carrying out anti-Israeli operations in the last few months, and a number of Palestinians there had been killed, whether for stabbing Israeli soldiers and officers, or for carrying out ramming attacks. And sometimes Palestinians had used guns to shoot and kill Israeli forces. At the end of the day, the Israeli troops had killed, let's say, since the 7th of October, Palestinians from all the occupied territories, whether the West Bank, the occupied Al-Quds, or even in the lands occupied in 1948, had killed over 457 Palestinians. Of course, we are saying that the majority of those were shot and killed here in the occupied West Bank during military incursions at military checkpoints, and others were members of the resistance groups, in addition to the fact that children and women had also been killed by the Israeli forces in cold blood here in the occupied West Bank.
All right, thanks a lot. Mona Candiel joining us from Ramallah in the occupied West Bank. And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
The Limelight.
The Zionist regime army has imposed yet more restrictions on the Palestinians of Al-Khalil, especially in the Old City, to facilitate the passage of settlers to the Ibrahimi Mosque. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote, the name Al-Khalil immediately evokes the tight military grip that the Zionist regime has imposed on the Palestinian city for many years in order to protect 400 illegal Zionist settlers who have occupied the heart of the city since 1990s. Yet for months, the Israeli regime army has imposed yet more restrictions on the Palestinians of Al-Khalil, especially in the Old City, to facilitate the passage of settlers to the Ibrahimi Mosque. The city area is divided and fragmented by hundreds of military checkpoints. 120 were erected by the Zionist regime around the mosque alone. Residents have to pass through them and endure all kinds of humiliation, while Zionist settlers have their comfortable streets and are not subjected to any kind of harassment. The Zionist settlers claim that the complex where the Ibrahimi Mosque is located, which they refer to as the Cave of the Patriarchs, belongs to them. In 1994, a far-right American Zionist settler carried out a massacre in the mosque during the month of Ramadan, killing 29 Muslim worshippers and injuring dozens more. Since then, Zionist settlers have taken control of half of the complex. Moreover, the fabricated regime of Israel divided the old city, sealed off entire streets, and closed more than 1,000 shops, which were considered the beating heart of the city. Many Palestinians who lived in the center of the city were forced to leave their homes at gunpoint by Israeli regime troops and settlers. Those who refuse to leave have been subjected to all sorts of harassment and racist practices throughout the years. Several neighborhoods in the city, such as Tel Romeida, Al-Shohada Street, and Al-Salamiyah and Jaber, are considered a microcosm of the larger context of suffering experienced by Palestinians due to Israeli occupation. Aref Jaber, 59, has lived in the Jaber neighborhood his entire life. Jaber witnessed the radical change that took place during the 1990s and told the Palestine Chronicle that Israel imposed even more severe restrictions over the last few months. Jaber said, "This neighborhood was connected to the Ibrahimi Mosque and we used to walk there before the infamous massacre in 1994. In parallel with its aggression against the Gaza Strip, the Zionist regime has increased its brutality against Palestinians in the West Bank, tightening its grip on them and restricting their movements even more. The Jaber neighborhood is inhabited by 5,000 Palestinians who are surrounded by several Israeli regime military checkpoints. They cannot leave their homes, let alone move freely at night. Otherwise, they would be subjected to arrest, abuse, and even torture. Checkpoint 160 is one of the most oppressive Israeli regime military checkpoints." Young Palestinian men who pass through checkpoint 160 are subjected to repeated searches and are often forced to remove their clothes and stand there for hours, handcuffed without any justification by the Israeli regime authorities. Jaber explained, "We are also subjected to unannounced curfews. When the evening comes, Israeli troops begin wandering the streets of the neighborhood, and if they see a Palestinian, even a woman, they abduct and abuse them for hours. In addition, Israeli regime troops, without any reason, routinely fire tear gas and sound bombs at Palestinian homes just for fun. when cases of suffocation are reported, ambulances are not allowed to enter the neighborhood. The restrictions of movement also extend to Palestinians who need to reach hospitals. Israeli regime troops carry out thorough inspections and harass them, preventing ambulances from transporting patients and even pregnant women who are in labor. Jaber said, "It's like living in hell. During Ramadan, it is as if we are in prison." He continued, "We cannot visit each other and we are forced to stay at home most of the time to avoid Israeli occupation troops who are deployed in large numbers." Zionist settlers in Al-Khalil have inflicted all sorts of abuse on Palestinian residents to force them to leave in order to seize the remaining homes and facilities of the Palestinians. Hisham Al-Sharbati is a member of Al-Khalil Defense Committee. He told the Palestine Chronicle that Israel imposed a tight curfew on the already restricted Old City since the beginning of its aggression against the Gaza Strip on October 7th. Recently, the Zionist regime military has allowed residents to leave their homes at specific hours. However, Palestinians continue to be subjected to harassment by Zionist troops and settlers deployed across the area. Al-Sharbati explained, "According to the new regulations imposed by the Israeli army, residents of this area are allowed to leave their homes at a certain hour, but they cannot return during the day. They must wait for a specific hour in the evening. The entrances to the Old City leading to the Ibrahimi Mosque are all closed and only residents of the adjacent houses are allowed to enter the complex. But they too are subjected to hours of humiliation at the Israeli regime military checkpoints." Recently, Israeli regime authorities began preventing Palestinians from using the cemetery inside the Old City. Therefore, the residents are forced to obtain a special permit to bury the dead there. Al-Sharbati said, "During the last Jewish holiday, settlers attacked a Palestinian funeral, beat the mourners and expelled them, forcing them to search for alternative cemeteries outside the Old City. The true goal of these brutal practices is clear. Israel wants to force the Palestinian population to leave their city. The families who decided to remain in this area, however, are refusing to surrender to the relentless humiliation and restrictions. They are determined to stay and preserve the original Palestinian identity of the city."
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Iraq, Pakistan, Oman, Qatar, the UAE, Saudi Arabia, Cuba, Venezuela, China, and Russia have all slammed the Israeli airstrike on Iran's embassy in Damascus, Syria. Yet the so-called flag bearers of international law and conventions in the West have kept mum about Israel's blatant violation of international law. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution has vowed that Tehran will make the occupation regime regret its deadly airstrike on the Iran embassy in Damascus. Welcome to The Spotlight. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. Let's get us started. These are my guests in this episode of The Spotlight. Vanessa Bila, independent journalist, is joining me out of Damascus. Also with us is Richard Merthurst. He's a journalist and commentator in Vienna.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Now, welcome to the show. Now, beginning with Vanessa, let's first talk about what the motive could be behind this operation. The majority, actually, of the experts and analysts that we've spoken to, speaking of provoking Iran, Israel trying to provoke Iran into engaging in war so that Israel could spread further instability and insecurity across the region. Your thought on this?
Well, I think just before Christmas last year, Yoav Gallant made it quite clear that they needed a victory in this war in order to survive. So, in the Middle East, so this is an existential war for Israel. It's been evident since October the 7th that they are desperately losing the war in Gaza against a relatively ill-equipped Palestinian resistance. They have had to evacuate from the northern occupied territories more than 100,000 settlers, as far as we know, in the contained war against Hezbollah in southern Lebanon. And so now they deem it necessary to expand the war, particularly into Syria, because we have to remember that this is the fourth in a series of attacks in the last 7 days. And all of these attacks have been carried out in conjunction with an upsurge in attacks by the terrorist groups across all the axes, particularly in the northwest and in central Syria. So, you know, the masks have fallen. People can now see exactly who is the real axis of evil in the region, the real axis of terrorism. Those that are silent about this appalling attack, people in Damascus, are still in shock that this has actually happened. I mean, this is an escalation beyond expectations. So Israel wants to expand the war. The resistance axis has been trying to restrict that expansion, but it remains to be seen if that remains the status quo.
All right. Now, let me turn to Vienna. Richard, the UK just a couple of hours ago summoned the Israeli ambassador, and that because three British aid workers got killed in Gaza. Now, when it comes to proportionality, you tell me, what is then Iran entitled to do now that it's lost several of its senior nuclear scientists and also military commanders at the hands of the Israeli regime?
Well, the Israelis want the Iranians to turn this into a full-blown war because it would suit them. But I think, the axis of resistance, not just Iran, but all of the resistance have proven over time that they are not ones to be tricked or to fall into traps. Although it's understandable that Iran's response should be just disproportionate, I think that as Iran have said, and they always respond and they will do it at the right time. Regarding the British summoning over the killing of three aid workers, what's interesting is that we have a chorus. We have all of these Western officials talking about the World Central Kitchen issue in Gaza, which is important. But they're doing that to avoid talking about this unprecedented attack on the embassy. I mean, speaking of proportionality, we have to talk about this more because, you know, we've never seen a so-called state attacking the embassy of another state in a third state. I mean, this is a violation of the UN Charter. It's a violation of the Vienna Convention, the Geneva Convention. It's so egregious. It's unprecedented. The fact that the British government don't even care enough to summon the Israelis over that alone, or any other ambassadors that are in Europe or the West to be summoned over this issue is scandalous, and it really shows you where their priorities lie.
Right. Now, Vanessa, some observers citing the reason for Israel to do this as an act of desperation, and that's mostly thanks to the failures it's facing in Gaza. It's not been able to defeat one single resistance group in Palestinian occupied territories, and maybe these anti-Netanyahu protests on the home turf, you know, a host of, you know, issues, the Israeli economy and all that. Do you share the same view?
Yeah, absolutely. As I mentioned, you know, Israel is not only losing the strategic and military war, it's losing desperately the propaganda war, its entire edifice of propaganda that has propped it up for since its creation as a illegal settler colonialist state by the British, and then of course it was adopted by the states. The entire anti-Semitism trope has been destroyed, particularly, of course, by the case of Professor David Miller, that has now stated very clearly that being anti-Zionism is acceptable. And you know, their entire defense for this genocide that they're committing, not only in Gaza but in the West Bank, which is based upon an entire series of lies that they produce from October the 7th onwards that have now gradually been completely debunked. The world is seeing them as they are, and their economy has taken a massive hit. Military morale is at its lowest. Settlers are leaving the Zionist entity itself, and the Zionist entity can only survive with settler support. So if settlers are starting to decide that it's no longer offering them security, they will leave. And then what is left? And also, you know, which country in its right mind now is going to be looking at investment in the future in a country that is clearly responsible for genocide of Palestinians across the territories?
Now, Richard, why shouldn't they learn a lesson from their past mistakes, like when they assassinated Iran General Soleimani? What did they gain? The resistance front even got stronger and got, you know, a boost in the arm. Now they're again killing Iranian commanders at a lower level compared to General Soleimani, the icon of the anti-terror and anti-Daesh, actually, in this part of the world.
I mean, without question, they gained nothing. The resistance got stronger. We can see the same pattern with Hamas, for example, when the Israelis thought, okay, if they assassinate Sheikh Ahmed Yassin, that this will destroy Hamas. Look at Hamas today. I mean, they've launched a full-blown war, and they can't even defeat them. So imagine with Iran how much stronger that is. It's, you know, the axis of resistance has shown over time that no matter what actions the Israelis and Americans take, they are losing on the chessboard. They simply cannot get around the failures that they are, you know, experiencing at home, so to speak, and on the battlefield. And this is actually why they assassinate. They lash out like a cat, you know, clawing someone, because they are terrorists deep down. This is who they really are. And it's not just the assassination of the high-ranking officials here. It's really, we have to understand this as an attack on Iran itself, because that's really what it is. You know, the Israelis have done this these attacks on Iran and its sovereignty before, and the same thing with Syria, but this is on an unprecedented level. And you look at the terror at Al Shifa Hospital. This is something, in my opinion, that they were trying to hide and distract from. But again, it's on a deeper level here. The Israelis are trying to find some kind of victory. They think that they can overcome their failures by assassinating people, and it's not going to happen. And I should point something out, that they are doing this on multiple levels. We had a terrorist attack in January in Iran. which you know, ISIS supposedly claimed responsibility for it. Mm-hmm. We had another ISIS attack in Russia. We had a recent terrorist attack in China. Do we really think this is a coincidence that there are all these assassinations? General Mousavi is another one, Saleh Haruri, and all these terrorist attacks by ISIS and Al-Qaeda who are known to have links to America and Israel. It's right. Not a coincidence.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Now, Vanessa, Richard mentioned something, and what the Israeli regime did is actually a violation of Iran. It means an attack on Iran because a sovereign country's diplomatic premises was targeted and hit. It was also the host country, so it's a violation of international law and conventions because it was diplomatic premises. Both, you know, the host country was violated, and also Iran. So who should hold this regime accountable for such an action?
Well, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, the Iranian foreign minister was quite clear that he holds Washington responsible. Washington, the UK, and the EU, and the allies of Israel have continued supplying weapons to Israel to conduct and carry out the genocidal campaign in Palestine, right. But they're also supplying the weapons to carry out these kind of assassinations. And it, as you've mentioned, it's not the first, particularly on Syrian territory. And this was what made it even more heinous for me and why everybody here is still in shock. This was around 5 o'clock in the afternoon, so 2 hours before Iftar, the breaking of fast during Ramadan. Right. It was packed full of people, the equivalent to Oxford Circus, in London, and as you said, it targets what is effectively a diplomatic zone. It was the consular section, which is actually the residence, if I understand it, of
That's
the
right.
ambassador. Mm-hmm. General Zahedi was there under diplomatic immunity. So this is actually a terrorist act. I mean, I consider Israel to be a terrorist state anyway for all of its other actions, but this was a clear, under international law, a terrorist act. And yet there has been the only country calling for an emergency session at the UN Security Council is Russia. The West is saying absolutely nothing. In response, for example, the US State Department spokesperson mumbled his way through his usual excuses for Israel. And this is appalling because this is plunging us into an abyss of global insecurity. The last time that this kind of act took place was a bombing by the U.S. of the Chinese embassy in Belgrade, which killed three Chinese diplomats, for which the U.S. apologized and said it was a mistake. Whether we believe that or not is by the by. Mm-hmm. But this is unbelievable. Israel is pushing the boundaries of all conventions, human rights conventions, Geneva conventions, Vienna conventions, and yet the response, imagine if, for example, Russia had bombed a U.S. embassy on another country's
exactly.
territory, what would the response be? We would be at war now.
Exactly. Now, Richard, Vanessa mentioned the role of the U.S., so to what extent could Washington be blamed for such acts that would further actually embolden the Tel Aviv regime to perpetrate more such crimes? Also, let's bear in mind that it was U.S.-made fighter jets, it was F-35 jets performing the strikes against the Iranian embassy.
The U.S. are absolutely responsible. It's as if an American pilot dropped it himself. The U.S. Air Force dropped it themselves. There is absolutely no distinction here. And we really need to be clear on this. The United States and Israel are one, and they attacked Iran together. The munitions, the payloads, the ordnances, every nut and bolt in that fighter jet and the six missiles that were fired were manufactured by American companies. The U.S. government manufactured this and then gave an export license and permission to give this to the Zionists, and then said nothing and continues to say nothing after, you know, we have diplomats killed. I mean, even if nobody was killed, the symbolic act of attacking an embassy is outrageous. It is beyond, it is unconscionable. It is truly beyond words. I still can't digest it, you know, even after 24 hours. It is so outrageous. And right. As Vanessa pointed out, the Israelis, I mean, is there a law that they haven't broken in any jurisdiction, under any convention? I don't know at this point. But the Americans have to be held responsible. And you know, a proper government, a real government, a one that cares about international law, a civilized government, would have immediately, you know, cut ties with the Israelis a long time ago, by the way. But after this act, let's say, cut ties and cut exports and, you know, held an emergency session, called for an emergency session at the UN Security Council and apologized for providing these weapons.
Right. Now, Vanessa, there were multiple countries that, and international bodies, including United Nations, for instance, they've all condemned this Israeli act of terrorism, except the West. So what is this indicative of?
Well, I mean, as I said earlier, you know, the masks are off. The fact that these U.S.-backed Zionist attacks on Syrian territory against Iranian military, against Hezbollah, against the Islamic resistance, against Syrian Arab army forces and national defense forces, because as I said, we shouldn't forget Israel carried out the attack in the northeast. Israel violated Syrian airspace and targeted east and west of Aleppo, enabling a terrorist attack on the western Aleppo axis. It carried out an attack on the Research and Development Center in Jamraya on the morning of this assassination. There, the fires were burning for more than 6 hours. And then finally, this assassination. So in 1 week, you know, Israel has violated, it's effectively declared war multiple times, and it's only because of the restraint of the resistance axis that we are not right now in a full-blown global war. And the thing is that Israel keeps pushing, it keeps provoking, and even though the response from the resistance has been very much a deterrence response, right, which is understandable, to, you know, where do we go next? Are they going to bomb the presidential palace? Mm-hmm. Are they going to bomb central Tehran? I mean, this is the thing. To what extent are Israel going to push this? Yep. To what extent do they want to expand this war?
Yeah, I don't think they dare to do that in a way. Now, Richard, no. Tel Aviv, what is it doing exactly? Is it playing global bully, an outlaw or rogue regime? What is it that Israel is exactly doing, given all the crimes it's been committing in Gaza, this recent terrorist attack on Iran embassy? Is there anything on the planet that is not viable for this regime? And then they depict Iran as a menace to regional security.
No, there is nothing that the Zionists will not do. What's funny to me is that today you can be arrested on the streets of London for saying you support Hamas or you support the Palestinian resistance. Mm. And the police who arrest you for this would have been killed by the Israelis a few decades ago because this is the nature of the Israelis, and they have done this. So, you know, whether we look at the attacks on Iran, the attacks on Britain, there's a history since the very beginning, going back a century, of the Israelis behaving in this. They have effectively invented modern terrorism, and I really mean that in the literal full sense of the term. The Israelis invented modern terrorism. They started mailing parcel bombs, letter bombs, planting bombs around London. Why wouldn't they bomb their neighbors? This is how they stole the land, is it not?
Right.
And so because Iran is the only one helping everyone to stand up for themselves and defend themselves, they try and go after Iran. It's that simple. There's no other explanation.
So, Richard, we have just 1 minute. So, Vanessa, what do you see on the horizon for the West Asia region, given all this warmongering by the U.S. and Israel?
I think escalation is almost unavoidable. I mean, as I said, inside Syria now we have an increase in the terrorist attack across all axes. Really, everybody is waiting to see what Iran's response will be, and then, of course, how the Zionists will respond to that. So I think we're in abeyance, but I think we're preparing for further escalation.
Okay, that's all the time we have for this episode. Thank you so much, Vanessa Billy, in Damascus, Richard Methurst in Vienna.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
النقي means the pure, the immaculate, the clean. Al-Hadi means the guide. All the Imams came for guidance.
السلام عليكم يا أهل بيت النبوة وموضع الرسالة ومختلف الملائكة.
Peace be upon the directors of right guidance, the lanterns in darkness, the patterns of piety. This is Dialogue, an introduction into the most important dialogues and conversations of Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam was a pure source of wisdom and knowledge. Despite his young age, he showed what divinely gifted knowledge really looks like. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was the direct descendant of the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings upon him and his holy household. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was also the 10th divinely appointed Imam, and he was the 10th divinely appointed successor of the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings upon him. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was also the son of the 9th divinely appointed Imam, Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam. After Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam answered with the answers of an expert the most difficult of questions posed to him by the Shia scholars and jurisprudents, the Shia leaders at that time had more faith and certainty now of what they had previously believed, that a divinely appointed Imam must have the most knowledge and he must be the most knowledgeable one of his time, regardless of whether he is young or old. And so the knowledge, virtue, and the delving into the sciences of the Holy Quran and the Sunnah of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam astonished the minds and sparked meetings and gatherings in all parts of the Muslim world. At this moment, we invite you to listen to parts of the Arabic text of Ziyarat Jamiatul Kabira by Imam Hadi alayhi salam, along with its English translation. Please stay tuned.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام على أئمة الهدى ومصابيح التجى وأعلام التقى وذوي النهى.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Peace be upon the directors of right guidance, the lanterns in darkness, the patterns of piety, the owners of understanding, the endued with thoughts, the havens of the peoples, the inheritors of the prophets, the perfect specimen, the most excellent call in the arguments of Allah against the inhabitants of the world, the hereafter and the former world. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon you all.
وَرَحْمَةُ اللَّهِ.
Peace be upon the exponents of the recognition of Allah, the centers of Allah's blessing, the essence of Allah's wisdom, the keepers of Allah's secrets, the bearers of Allah's book, the successor of Allah's prophet, and the progeny of Allah's messenger. May Allah send blessings upon him and his household. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon them.
وَرَحْمَةُ اللَّهِ.
Peace be upon the imams, the leaders, the guides, the chiefs, the authorities, the defenders, the protectors, the people of the reminder, the men in authority, the left ones by Allah, his select, his party, the case of his knowledge, his argument, his path, his light, his proof. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon them.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. It's an honor and a blessing to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. So, dear friends, we are talking about the dialogues of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam. There's this one excerpt from a very long conversation that Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam has with one of his friends. Now, we don't necessarily want to speak about the statement in question, but there's something that's very beautiful that comes out about this. And so the conversation eventually reaches a point where Imam al-Hadi says that Allah has exempted certain people who don't have, you know, some of their basic senses, or they're blind, or, you know, they can't, you know, one of their legs is broken, or there's certain things that Allah has exempted certain people from jihad and all other duties that they cannot do. For example, Allah has imposed on wealthy people that they must offer the Hajj and pay the zakat because they have the ability to do that. And Allah has not imposed the Hajj or zakat on poor people. And so Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam continues. He brings up a verse from the Holy Quran, and then he says that this proves that Allah has not imposed on people what is beyond their ability. And thus, this is the soundness of creation. Now, here, this is something that's really important. We don't necessarily want to talk about the statements in question, but this concept, or this higher reality or higher meaning that Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam is trying to convey, and that is that Allah does not impose a certain duty or a responsibility or an obligation upon a human being that they are not able to do, or they don't have the capacity or the capability to do. Now, whether this is prayers, five daily prayers, the wajib prayers, the salah, or whether this is fasting in the holy month of Ramadan, or whether it is any other kind of thing that Allah has made wajib, on one hand, or on the other hand, things that Allah has forbidden and made haram for us. Both of these things that are obligations and these things which we have been prohibited from, these are all things that are within our capacity and within our capability. And every single one of us is able to accomplish these things. Now, sure, if there are certain, you know, reasons or there are certain, things that prevent us from accomplishing these things, legitimate things, of course, we shouldn't make excuses, you know, but for example, we are poor, we don't have financial means, or we are sick, or, you know, God forbid, we can't hear, or we're blind, or those are different things. But on the whole, people, you know, who are whole, who are healthy, who have all the requirements, we must never think that Allah has forced us to do anything, or that Allah is forcing us to do something that we cannot do. Matter of fact, according to these words of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala does not impose or put an obligation upon a human being that they cannot fulfill. This is Dialogue, Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam.